Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Armour, and today I'm joined by Mr. Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you doing this fine Thursday afternoon?
Oh, fantastic. I watched the sunrise on Racism is Not the Problem this morning, quite literally. Yes. There was a billboard, and I went there for sunrise, and that was a delight.
Well, we all have our own hobbies, I suppose, and we'll get to that in a minute. And of course, we have returning once again, Mr. Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you?
Yes, I'm fatigued, I think. But if I'm fatigued by the fact that I've been on this thing for about 3 days in a row, I can only sympathize with the people watching. I mean, because if I'm tired of my face, imagine how they must feel.
Yeah, you see, I try to alleviate our listeners and viewers' burden of that by just covering my face with hair. So they don't have to look at me too much.
I'm trying the same thing, but this baby face don't age.
Lucky fish.
I saw your dog was mentioned twice in the comments yesterday. Once because someone was complaining about lack of mic discipline, and that was because, of course, your puppy Kaspar Herman was smashing things on the floor while you were trying to speak. In fact, I think I can hear that now. And another one was expressing unhappiness that they weren't able to see the puppy in the show.
Yeah, no, I must say that not only is he more likable than I am, but his political analysis really cut above mine, at least.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure. Anyway, let us get to the issue of today, and that aforementioned rising of the sun, metaphorical sun on our campaign. So it's racist to say that racism is not the problem. Well, that's at least according to complaints made to the Advertising Commission and on 702 this morning, I believe. Gabriel, what are people saying and what's going on here?
So we were notified. So just background context, if you missed it, we've been running a campaign, Racism is Not the Problem, based on surveys commissioned by the Institute of Race Relations that show 80% of people haven't experienced any form of racism in the last 5 years. Only 3% of people identify racism as a major national problem in the top two. And most people agree that politicians race hustle, that is to say, they exaggerate racism in order to excuse their own failures. Those and various other questions have informed this campaign to say what needs to happen in South Africa is we need to make it normal. We need to make it okay. We need to make you feel like you're not crazy. If you see in a particular situation that racism is not the problem, to say racism is not the problem. Those words should not struggle to pass your lips. It should just be natural, like saying, ooh, there's a dog and it's cute, okay? If it's a cat, then you don't call it a dog. If it is racist, you don't say it's not the problem. But if racism is not the problem, then you say racism is not the problem. Very simple. This is racist, according to two complaints that were brought to the Advertising Regulatory Board. Both said that the billboard advertising www.racismisnottheproblem.co.za, which you should go check out, is racist. That's all it says is racismisnottheproblem.co.za. They said that's racist. It's promoting racism. One said that it's telling white people to be racist. The other one says it's saying that racism is not a problem at all in this country, which is crazy. Basic understanding of the English language, which we all share, shines a bright line. Between A and the definite article and the indefinite article, the universal claim and the particular claim. This was then brought to the attention of, I mean, we've had quite a few calls from mainstream media this morning, but one call we did not get was from Clement Magnantella, who had an open line discussion on 702 this morning, where for about 20 minutes, he and his callers denounced this thing. Some people said you must take it down, you must ban it, much like the complaints made to the ARB. He seemed to echo that. Also conflating, saying, oh, you can't say racism is not a problem. Also saying, you know, the Institute of Race Relations clearly doesn't care about poor black people. Saying that if you're white, then you have a kind of privileged point of view that makes you recalcitrant and incapable of seeing what really is going on, talking about the daily lived experience of racism that he and everyone else suffers, which again is contradicted. I mean, the one amazing thing is he said, "It's terrible. I'm so tired of this. I'm so triggered." He was very angry. But I can't put on the angry voice right now. Anyway, so "I'm so tired. I'm so angry. I've got this daily lived experience of suffering the slings and arrows of racism. And now these guys are denying the experience of black people." Didn't use the phrase slings and arrows. That comes from Shakespeare. But he did say this very exhausting thing is having the experiences, the lived experiences of black people being denied, which is amazing because we are actually just about more than anyone else in the country trying to express some data that are drawn from the lived experiences of black people. 80% of black people surveyed across 9 provinces in a random sample said they have experienced no form of racism whatsoever in the last 5 years. Now, that is an impossible thing to say on 702. I've heard people call in and make points like this through the years and get denounced by the hosts as internalized oppressors or, I don't know, you know, or worse. But it's a fact. It's a fact that we've established again and again through our polling. And it is precisely respectful of other people's reported lived experience. And I think it's sort of a curious case of projection, right? What's really happening is that 702 is ignoring the lived experience of most black people who say, look, racism is not our problem. We've got big problems and we'd like them to be addressed. And actually, we think that a voucher system is way better than BEE as a way to address that. That's a direct question that we asked. That's getting ignored. And then those doing the ignoring accuse us of ignorance and of racism. So it's not terribly surprising. In a way, I'm surprised that it's taken so long. But we will have to file a response to the ARB to try and stop this billboard from being taken down. We will have to respond, and we will eagerly respond in long form on various platforms to keep the message going out. And we look forward to the opportunity to do that.
So the thing that strikes me, Herman, about this whole thing is how rarely our opponents have been willing to actually read what we're saying and address that. There's a lot of straw manning that goes on, right? Every time we make clear that we're saying it's not the problem, as in it's not the biggest problem, it's not the problem that infects everything, it's not the one that we have to put all of our efforts on focusing on. And yet our opponents are unwilling to address that. They always just say, oh, they're denying racism exists. Why is that, Herman?
Oh, I mean, that's a really tough question. I think in Gabriel's, you know, pet topic of the esteem economy, there's much of an answer, is that it costs you if you are in this bubble, in this specific commentariat environment. It costs you. You lose prestige. You lose social capital and the admiration of your peers were you to grant the Institute of Race Relations argument. I think that's the most charitable interpretation of that, because I think that's just human behavior. You don't want to lose prestige. You don't want to lose esteem. One could go darker and more, you know, cynical to that, to an ideological point where then something like critical race theory does kick in substantively, not just as a social presence, but as an actual intellectual theory that they hold to as truly representative of reality. Rather than perhaps just, you know, a social expression of solidarity within that particular grouping. But I must say it is so easy. What really gets me and tickles me, you know, almost in an amusing way, not quite, is the dishonesty that has to go into the straw manning, the vilification. You can look at Gallup data from 2014. You can look at IRR data from 2015 to 2020. You can look at the ANC's own opinion polling data that the Institute got hold of through means, and all of these things indicate that racism, race discrimination, simply doesn't rank highly. It ranks. Of course it ranks. In a country like South Africa, it would be bizarre if our history didn't leave us with some PTSD of racism and scars, finding, you know, toxic manifestation in perhaps some of the more fringes and more vulnerable societies and communities. But it is not the problem. And if Manjitela can only, entertain his socio-eroticism through dishonesty, then I think it says a lot.
That's a $10 phrase.
A $10 phrase. That's what that very was. Socio-eroticism.
Nick, can I quickly come in and just give a very Go short ahead. Answer to the same question?
Go you ahead. Know,
there once was a time when Shelby Steele, a great American author that I've talked about before on the show, talked about white Americans who really did say racism doesn't exist. It was a short period of time, and there are only a few, but there really were such people who said, no, racism doesn't exist. There's no racism at all. Crazy. Right now, South Africa, for the last few years, has been in a place where fake racism, according to the Leading Lights, doesn't exist. The Leading Lights say fake racism doesn't exist. No one would ever make up racism. No one would ever accuse you of being racist unless it were true. That's their point of view. There's not one case where they'll say, well, you know, this was terribly racist and that's a warning, you shouldn't be racist. And this was terrible fake racism. This person invented racism as a scapegoat to conceal his own failures. And that's a terrible thing. You must never do that. You must never falsely accuse someone of racism if it's not true and you know it's not true. But they don't believe it exists. And so when you say racism is, so for them, racism is either everywhere or nowhere. So when you say racism is not the problem, that it doesn't go into the brain hole as anything other than, oh, you're saying it's not anywhere at all. And they need it to be everywhere so that if they can find it somewhere, if they can find one example of it, that proves their thesis again and again. So they don't have, we have to spend millions doing demographically representative surveys. All they have to do is find one guy who's willing to make one accusation of racism, and then it's everywhere. Hmm. It's much cheaper. As a business model, it's a much cheaper way.
But I must say something that I also just want to add on to that is that I'm glad Clemens Manjitela and his callers have this opportunity to denounce us. Like genuinely, I will never, and none of us are saying this, say they don't have the right or the liberty or the freedom to denounce us as racist. Please do so. Because of all the, you know, notorious race incidents over the last few years, that guy on the beach, what was it? Katsavelos or something like that. Yes.
Yeah.
What struck me about that is that a group of gogos acted on Katsavelos far more efficiently, far more humanely than any legal process to have his racism addressed in some form. Social censure was far more effective in addressing that instance than any state or legal censure. So please, if Clemens Manjitela and his listeners genuinely believe that we are racist for saying racism is not the problem, I think they are being, you're cutting their noses to spite their faces if they are trying to use ineffective, blunt means such as official complaints and state power, where we know social censure is a vastly more effective way of establishing change. And I mean, there are some great studies from Norway on that. One of my favorites is the one about parking fines or something. There was also a French example where instead of escalating your fine the longer you didn't pay it, the municipality would hire, I think, a brass player to follow you throughout the town. And that improved the paying of fines. The other one in Norway is vehicles that did, the owners of which did not pay fines, had large, bright pink, I think, polka dot stickers stuck onto their cars. And that worked like way more effectively in those municipalities because social censure, the esteem economy, is actually the thing to change behavior if you believe behavior is toxic, like Anya Taylor clearly does.
Yeah. And that's where we're trying to play. Okay. Yeah. It is, you are stigmatized if you say racism is not the problem when evidence supports that. And we are trying to destigmatize that. And it's a very important move. And I think the reactions that we've been getting show how threatening it is to a worldview that has been dominating South Africa, driving unemployment up, driving economic growth down, and driving the poor into the dust. So if you give a damn, help us destigmatize the phrase racism is not the problem. When it's true, you must say it. It's just common sense. And we do call for your support.
I must say, I think at least some of our opponents, based on the way that the reaction so quickly jumped to, this must be banned, this must be crushed, these people must be punished. And that seemed to be the sentiment coming from at least some people who were critical of this campaign. I do feel like some of our opponents they don't care about that esteem stuff in the sense that they don't want the social pressure thing. They salivated the opportunity to exercise the power of institution, state.
The grievance might mean more to them than the solution. And I do think that we must also be careful not to just see this as a problem on the other side. I've become, you know, thoroughly disenchanted with people that might be grouped roughly in our corner for also calling on this banning nonsense as a response to something they don't like. And, you know, let's call her Schmander Schmoens is particularly a bugbear of annoyance on that. But anyhow, that's a whole different network of rabbit warrens.
Yes. Gabriel, any final thoughts?
Well, I'd like to move to the particular application of racism is not the problem in Johannesburg.
Yes. So, quite a few of our listeners live in Johannesburg. Me and Gabriel live in Johannesburg. And there have been a lot of people talking recently, I think, about how the city's looking a bit shabby, about how there are potholes in places, about how municipal services aren't working, about how there are power outages that are unrelated to load shedding. Gareth von Onselen has written several columns to this effect, which have been very apocalyptic in their description of Johannesburg. And I don't think they've been completely unwarranted, especially from what I've seen, what I'm hearing from my friends who are still in local government.
Yes, Nick does not go into the streets, but for those of us who do, they're holier than thou.
I have a network of friends who go into the streets.
Some of your best people are street people. Some of your best friends are street people.
In a manner of speaking. But there's an article in the Daily Maverick that says that Joburg is not falling apart. In fact, it's in the process of rebirth after the demise of a white city. And that the only people who are upset about this are those who are upset that Johannesburg is transforming from a place where only white people had the right to be there. This person is, of course, Jeff Makubo, who is the current ANC mayor, who wrote an article in the Daily Maverick suggesting that really there is nothing wrong with Joburg, that it's all progress, that Joburg has problems, yes, but really so much of the whinging about a fabled time when Joburg was a great city is just people upset that the whites are no longer in control and keeping black people out of the peripheries. So I think there's quite a lot to tackle here. Look, he writes it. It's amazing that he could produce so many words and such a stupid idea. But the thing is, Herman, while I think there are definitely parts of Joburg that look better than they did in 1994, there are also an awful lot which have not improved. And this is not just in white areas. I think the people in Soweto who are often without power would not be so quick to share Jeff Makubo's assessment of the city. What do you make of this, Emma?
Well, I must say, I think the point about, you know, using so many words to say so close to Bagarol, I think he must have been spending time with Irvin Jim. I don't know if you guys have ever read a tweet by that man. I have never seen vacuity so verbosely expressed. It really is something quite special. But
Sorry, can I just make one more thing clear as well? I think that a lot of the decline people are talking about is a phenomenon of the last 2 or 3 years, especially.
Yes,
I think that's very important. Yes. I think that's very important.
And actually, that's the sort of the point I struggle to segue into. But let me put it this way. And Jacob Zuma has been in the news recently. And I remember towards the end of his presidency, he once invoked P.W. Botha as a defense for his behavior as head of state and head of government. You know, he said, you know, P.W. Botha did this. If your moral reference point is P.W. Botha, I mean, some serious questions need to be asked. But if your reference point to your city not, you know, being perhaps, what's the Trumpian phrase, a shithole, if your reference point is the end of 60 or 50 years of racial oppression, and you say, that's the thing we compare it with, and never mind that it's, you know, almost three decades after that, but if you think that you only need to do better than the apartheid government did, and you are in a city with 75, 76% black people, you are insulting black South Africans on what actually would be the opportunity to live meaningful lives.
It's difficult to set the bar closer to the ground on that one.
Hmm. Yes, and
deeper underground.
Yes, I mean, it's almost, that bar is almost as deep as a pit toilet. So the problem here is if that's your reference and saying, you know, at least it's better than then, you really are up shit creek without a paddle. And Nick, I think you're exactly right. The chaos since the 2016 election and the dislodgement of Herman Mashaba has seen aggressive deterioration of living standards. And Nick, we spoke about a married couple being electrocuted in their shower the other day. I'm sorry, but I don't think their families were white or longing for 1992.
Yeah. I think that the time is kind of, so here's the starting proposition. Johannesburg in the last few years has become a more unlivable city. And that is a problem not just because of lockdowns, it's a problem that predates it and a problem that is going to outlive it. That's the allegation, right? The response is to say, no, that's not the problem. Racism is the problem. You'd only think that if you were a racist and you were harking after some apartheid era dispensation. So this is a nice example. This is exactly why most South Africans that we poll agree that politicians talk up racism and colonialism in order to excuse their own failures. This is
Most of Makubo's article is actually recounting his own experiences of having to run away from the police.
Apartheid is very terrible. He had the worst time. Yeah. So don't criticize me. So there is a challenge here, which is trying to figure out when was Johannesburg improving the most? When did it fall back? Because Johannesburg is quite a heterogeneous place, it's hard to do that all in one go and in a short time period. But something worth noting is the central business district and its surrounding suburbs, which from the late 80s suffered rent boycotts, where black South Africans who were living had been allowed to, you know, Group Control Areas Act is abolished, so now black South Africans can live in Heilbrow and Yeovil, Doornfontein, and so on. And that was very good. But then communist leaders like Ronnie Casserolls and Joe Slovo say, no, you mustn't pay rent because that's part of the capitalist system. And that kind of initiates an era of hijacking buildings and an increase in crime, a decrease in policing. And partly the tragedy is that the apartheid government stopped policing terrible racist laws, but then policing kind of just stopped overall. And there were gunshots that I heard most nights in the week for some years as a small kid in Yeovil. Things then improved. By around 2010, there was a marked shift. And you saw this with the mushrooming, not just of 44 Stanley, Mabaneng, of Arts on Main turning into that, the rejuvenation of the Market Theatre, which never really died, the return of the Johannesburg Art Gallery to being a cultural place of excellence where people of all colors, really diverse crowds would come and see great, beautiful things, the universities becoming the hotbed for the Braamfontein kind of revolution. So from 2010 onwards, you can see a great growth. And if you look at TUHF, T-U-H-F, which is the largest sort of lender to real estate developers in central business districts across this country, you will find, and also if you look into the valuations of properties in the central business district, which I did, I looked into about 30, you'll find buildings that are being sold in the 2000s for hundreds of thousands of rands or up to 1.5 million being resold 10 years later in the mid 20 teens for from 20 million to 85 million. So an increase in value of a factor of two orders of magnitude, huge developments in wealth building and growth, and it was good stuff. And think about, I mean, visit Mabaneng today. It's already like the last three friends that I spoke to about Mabaneng were like, ah, got robbed, my friend got mugged, this and that. Right. If you speak to, as I have, I've got lots of Ethiopian contacts in Jeppe Street in the fashion district right next to the second biggest taxi rank in the country. They say life today is much worse than it was 5 years ago. And the property valuations that I've been looking at say that the growth has totally stalled. So there are real data to support that just in the CBD. And there's a longer story to tell about other suburbs.
Yeah,
the point is that this is not just anecdote. This is not just, if you look at the one other sort of data point that I want to make is if you look at the ratio between rates, the cost that you pay, the valuation on your house and the actual market sale price, they've divorced one another and are living in separate realities. If you look furthermore at the ratio between how much you pay and what you get back for it, whatever the color of your skin, there's been another divorce from reality. So I think people have very real grievances, and Jeffrey Mukuba's attempt to deflect this is shocking. But here's my challenge and here's my prediction. This is exactly what worked for Jacob Zuma in 2009. When he was blatantly corrupt, he went up for election and he said, no, 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 don't listen to the DA. Anyone who criticizes me is racist. Racism is the problem and electing me is the solution. Now Mukuba is saying, look, racism is the problem. If you elect me, then it'll be very nice. And I don't think it's going to work. I actually don't think it's going to work. I certainly don't think it's going to work as well for Mukuba as it worked for Zuma, because South Africans are kicking the habit. This racism everywhere thing as an excuse for people's failures is an opioid for the masses. It is straight out of Marx. Literally, a good idea of Marx was fetishism. We fetishize race in order to excuse our failures. This is a proper diagnosis. And like opium, it's very addictive. And even when you realize it's a bad thing, people still fall for it. But more and more people have kicked the habit. And that is good news. And yeah, I think if opposition parties, not just the DA, if opposition parties generally tackle Mukuba on this, if they make an issue out of this, I think they are going to be amazed at how many people stand up and say, yes, we are for the party that says bugger off to a mayor who can't administer properly, who's watching poor people get poorer, and then says, no, don't blame me, you're racist. That's not good enough. I think people will be excited, not just by avoiding this talking point, but by addressing him directly.
The poor problem of Action SA is Hamon Mashaba can't do that, because we all remember Julieta Televi complaining about a drain and then beneficiaries of apartheid. The same card. So for Action SA that
life is full of changes. Let's see Herman Mashaba try. I think he can. I think anyway.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. There's something I should have said at the beginning. I just want to quickly say it. There was a period in the sort of, I think, 2010s where basically electricity maintenance was all but stopped in Johannesburg. And I think this was driven by a perception that this would only really affect the old suburbs, which many, I think, would assume are just the white suburbs. But of course,
Westcliff, through this Parkview. Yeah,
there's places like sort of Sophiatown that are really not that are quite old and they're affected by these same problems, but are really not, you know, white suburbs in the same way, especially in modern Johannesburg
or Yeovil.
right? And that is one of the and that happened under the ANC's tenure in Joburg, and it has been disastrous. So much when you add to it like the damage caused by load shedding, so much of Johannesburg's electricity infrastructure is in a shocking state.
The billions that are spent right. every year just on.
Exactly. And even the new stuff being put in places.
Replacing like, the stolen stuff. It's billions on just right. replacing stolen stuff. Because,
yeah, exactly.
But racism is the problem, guys. I mean, I fact in evidence and actual living standards, but racists.
No, exactly. Even the new stuff in places like Soweto and places like Deep Sulun, where there is electrification in some areas, often it's of terrible quality and it blows up, or it gets stolen and then blows up, or something. You know, or it breaks down regularly, or the parts are bad quality or something like that. So, Makubo, you can do better. anyway, that's
it's
all
time. We're going to say on this topic. It's time to stop with this.
That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week for the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.